The Inside Ellen Road podcast is sponsored by PR Supplies at Unit 2 Wither Park Industrial Estate, Leeds, postcode LS53AP. Check out PR Supplies on Facebook for all your home retail needs. Hello, welcome back to the Inside Elland Road podcast. Leeds' unbeaten run across all competitions in 2024 is over. Not that you'd know it from the reaction of the 6,000 or so in Stamford Bridge's shed end at full time on Wednesday night. Nevertheless, the team can make it a club record 10 straight league wins with a victory on Saturday over Huddersfield Town. Eyes very much on the prize, but that prize is just another 3 points, according to Daniel Farker. No championship team has ever won 11 straight matches, though, so watch this space if they do get that 10th this weekend. Back to Chelsea then. Graham, when was the last time you came away from a defeat feeling like you'd won?
I feel like I'd won from the outset because the Pressford was so excellent. And therefore, I feel like my evening was always going to be fairly splendid. That was good, wasn't it? You know what it reminds me of a little bit? When Bielsa's Leeds went to Arsenal and lost 1-0 and probably should have won that game, and it was in the FA Cup, just like this. Melier played and was a bit of a revelation, actually. I just remember him pinging balls out to the fullbacks with pinpoint accuracy. And it was like a national awakening to bloody hell, Leeds are a bit good, aren't they? Aren't Leeds fun? And it was a little bit like when you've been into a band ever since you, like, you know, you got a free CD with a magazine and it was their single was on it and you've been telling everyone about this new band. Nobody really listens to you, but then suddenly they're on MTV and then your mates start to say, oh, have you seen such and such a band? And you're like, well, I've been watching them all season, mate. It was a bit like that with Bielsa's Leeds at Arsenal. And it felt a little bit like that at Chelsea. It was the same narrow, undeserved score and defeat. But this time it wasn't Melier that was the revelation. It was Archie Gray. And I think Leeds showed quite significantly just how fun they can be to watch and how good they can be. I thought it was a great night for the team. And if anything, to me, it just carried on the momentum.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it, and quite concise as well. You managed to introduce the press food without going on for 5 minutes. So that's kudos to you for that. £31 per head, I overheard someone saying in the press room, is how much that Chelsea lay on. So, yeah, clubs, take note, because if there's one thing that Chelsea do right, it's not transfers, it's the press food. So, yeah, it was a great night. Despite the result, which is such an incongruous thing to say, because there were so many individual storylines that were born out of the 90 minutes. Matteo Joseph's double, you know, you wait for a first professional goal in football and then two come along in the same night. London buses, some would say. And then, you know, the Archie Gray performance. I mean, that was, even in the first half, Graham, you were kind of just going, Oh wow. And, you know, doing loads of little things like that when Archie would sort of escape pressure and just, I don't know, make two £100 million midfield players look as though they were on a par with him, or rather the other way around. There's so many storylines, as I'm saying, but, you know, the last minute winner, again, it didn't feel like it was an enormous blow. Obviously, on the night, it's very disappointing to, you know, to not go the distance, because when you're that close to when you're effectively 90 minutes from Wembley, it's disappointing. But if you look at the bigger picture, I think an extra half an hour on a Wednesday night and then playing again on Saturday lunchtime, probably, and if we're being honest, Chelsea probably would have won that game in extra time, given just, you know, the quality that they have, even though that they were comfortably the second best team in that second half. But yeah, a good acid test to see where this team is against a mid-table Premier League opponent. And I'm not saying that in a barbed way. I'm not saying that to sort of butter up all the Leeds United fans listening. That's where Chelsea are over the past two seasons. So it's not as though they've gone toe-to-toe with Man City or Liverpool. But it's a good barometer of where this team is at. And yeah, on the whole, a positive night with lots of positives to take.
Yeah. If I was going to rank the positives, I would say Archie Gray in midfield, looking like he absolutely belongs, would be probably number one. I got some stick at halftime for saying that he was having a terrific game, presumably from people who whose eyeballs are painted on, because all those little things he did in the first half that I really liked were on both sides of the ball. So he forces the mistake, doesn't he, for the goal?
Mm-hmm.
You know, he senses a bit of hesitation or slow play or whatever from Chelsea as they play out from a goal kick, slides in, forces the ball to Anthony, and then suddenly Joseph's got it. It's in the back of the net. He knocked the ball over the head of a very expensive man and collected it on the far side. It was his ball retention, I think, that caught the eye the most, just the way he kept the ball moving for Leeds and didn't really look like losing it too often. But then the second half, I mean, it was almost like someone at halftime had passed him a phone and said, "Here, look at the replies to this tweet." And then he'd gone out specifically to make that tweet entirely correct.
To vindicate you.
It wasn't even, there was no debate by full time, was there? Because the way he played in that second half, the dribble down by the touchline where he took it away from one, a little bit of a step over, and then he's away from two into space, was excellent. There was a couple of tackles when he recovered the ball, one where Chelsea were breaking. And it was just, it was very, very composed. He looked after the ball really well in tight spaces against players who should be far better than him, you know, given their experience, given the level they've played at, given the amount of money spent on them. And yet, he never once looked out of place, did he?
No, not at all. And you were saying that he was instrumental in the first goal. He was also instrumental in the second, because that move, which ends with Anthony putting the cross on Joseph's head, that comes from Gray getting the team out of trouble, dribbling past two players, you know, knocking the ball from side to side between the instep of his left and right boots, in his own box, playing up on the right up to Connor Roberts. And yeah, I mean, it was just so composed. And yeah, it was rightly so the biggest talking point after that match was Archie Gray's performance, man of the match performance. And I'm glad that it was sort of recognised as such, because, you know, a lot of the time I feel as though man of the match awards can be given to the player that, you know, scores the most goals in the game, even if they've done nothing. Like, yeah, okay, maybe Erling Haaland, when he scores five, okay, might be deserving of man of the match. But I think what Archie did was, yeah, he dictated the tempo. He drove the team forward. He tackled, he tracked back. Everything seemed as though he was, you know, this metronomic 27-year-old who'd been, you know, around the block plenty of times, not a 17-year-old going on 18 who was playing against Premier League opposition for the first time. Just so undaunted. You know, occasion didn't get the better of him. Yeah, everything about it was just so mature. And yeah, again, we keep saying it, but the lad has got something special.
Yeah, he has. Two other things I'd say. It was interesting that Eddie Gray was so insistent on him, the fact that he's not a right back, he'll play in midfield. You know, he really hammered home that point, didn't he, when he went on TV with Chopper before the game. And yeah, the other thing that I would point out is that he wasn't my man of the match.
Archie Gray was not your man of the match?
He was not, no. There was a player who got a higher match rating than him. He got the man of the match.
Okay. I do remember this now, yeah.
Yeah, and that was Ethan Ampadu.
Are you willing to say that on the podcast that you were wrong?
Incorrect. Negative, Ghost Rider. Ethan Ampadu was the best Leeds player on the pitch for me for 90 minutes. What Archie Gray did was the most impressive, because he has never... competitively, I mean, you say he's never played against Premier League opposition. He played against Villa in Australia. I was there. I went to Australia. You were still here. I went to Australia, and he played.
Donald Trump in of you there.
He played then, but he didn't play competitively, did he, against Premier League opposition? And yeah, the context, I think, is just everything. You know, his age, his inexperience, you know, the place he was playing it at, you know, at Chelsea with that huge away following, you know, the state of the game at various points. He was a big reason why Leeds dominated so much of that second half. And that kept surprising me as the second half went on. You know, I kept saying, Leeds are bossing this. Like, Leeds are actually bossing this game. But for me, I thought Ethan Ampadu was unreal next to Gray. Just, I mean, he bossed the game, you know, arguably even more than Gray did. And the physicality with which he applies himself, whether he's at centre midfield or centre half, is excellent to watch because he does it in a really controlled way. Like, he's not going around kicking people. He's not committing loads of cynical fouls. He's not always at risk of a yellow card. He does it in a really disciplined way. He just gets a foot in a lot, or he just stands up as a player tries to dribble through him, and he seems to come away with the ball. And I thought he passed the ball really well, and his long-range passing was excellent too. A midfield of Ampadu and Gray is an exciting prospect, I think, for Leeds. And what was great, there's a lot of unanswered questions about this team when it comes to the Premier League, and nobody wants to count their chickens before they hatch. But in a hypothetical world where Leeds go up, there's players that you think, would he be quite there for Premier League level? Would he be enough for Premier League level? On that evidence, which is admittedly scant evidence, it's only one game, but those two were up against a very good midfield and more than held their own. In fact, got on top for large sections of it. And that, to me, is quite an interesting and exciting prospect when it comes to what may happen next season.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't really surprise me that much that Archie was doing so well at Stamford Bridge, because, you know, you're saying that, you know, you've watched him all season. Some of us have watched him for three seasons. Some of us watched him two seasons ago at Stamford Bridge in a 1-0 defeat by Chelsea's under-21s for Leeds' 21s. It's something that I asked Matteo Joseph after the game, and he kind of cracked a smile. I was like, yeah. You know, we had a moment afterwards, and, you know, like, do you remember when we played here for the 21s in front of nobody? Now there's a whole stadium full of people. You know, it's just when you put the yards in, like I do, when I'm not being carted off to Australia, like, I don't know, the fancy dance of this industry. You know, 21s games, it's pretty par for the course. Anyway, I've seen many Archie performances like that before. No surprise to me. No surprise in my life.
So it's probably not worth us talking about Matteo Joseph, because you've seen all those, you know, those finishes before. So we'll just move on very quickly.
Well, Graham, is there an occasion? Probably the back end of last season, when I said that I genuinely think the most natural finisher, in the way that his sort of body flows through the ball at the club, and bear in mind this was at the back end of last season when Leeds couldn't hit a barn door. I said that the most natural finisher was Matteo Joseph. Now, what did that first goal look like to you?
Yeah, that was fluid, predatory poaching from young Matteo Joseph Fernandez.
Regatillo.
Yeah, just fantastic. But more than his goals, he took both goals really well. Second one was a lovely goal. You know, the timing of his arrival, the cross, the header, which was so composed, by the way. And he had an age, you know, in relative terms, to think about what he was going to do with that ball. I thought his overall performance was really, really good. I thought he bounced defenders quite well. I thought he linked up quite well. There was a really nice pass out to the touchline after a spin. There was another good turn that bought Enzo Fernandez a yellow card. There was that little dribbly kind of strength bit that he did in the second half to hold the ball up and then slot it in on the inside of the fullback to put Pirro into the box. It was just a good performance. And what we've been saying for a while, what we've been thinking for a while, is that he just needs a goal. In fact, I might have said it on the podcast. I've definitely said it to you. You probably jotted it down in your diary that day. But he just needed a goal, because he was getting moments, but he wasn't really getting chances. Like, how many times have we seen him come on in the Championship very late in the game, and he's trying to hold the ball up, trying to win a free kick, trying to win a throw-in. He's not where he really wants to be, which is in around the area, getting a chance to score. He hasn't had many chances at all. So we wanted to see him take one because that felt like, and Farke himself said it, the next big step, you know, the next box ticked was get yourself a senior goal. And I think about what that senior goal, what the goal did for Bamford. Think about what the goal did for Nyonto this season, that first one. You know, that was a spark for both of them that set them both alight, you know, when it came to goal scoring and confidence. You hope that exactly the same thing will happen with Joseph. But the complication, of course, is that he's not going to get the same kind of chances that they've been getting. You know, he's not going to start at Huddersfield, is he? It's unlikely that he starts at Huddersfield. But I really hope he continues to get minutes, and I hope he gets an increasing amount of minutes, because I think they have a real talent on their hands. And we've been here before. We've talked about the potential that Greenwood had and the potential that Joffe's got. And for injury reasons, mostly in Gelhardt's case, and probably in terms of not really knowing what he is reasons for Greenwood, or managers seeing him as a six when he's definitely not, we've not seen them bring that potential to fruition yet for Leeds in a Leeds shirt. It'd be really satisfying if this one, you know, this was the striker who saved Leeds an absolute fortune and went on to be a very, very prolific striker at senior level.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to rank them. I mean, you're mentioning Greenwood and Gelhardt there, and you know that at one point Gelhardt was the best prospect in the club, you know, ahead of even Somerville. But it's funny how these things pan out. You know, you get a loan and maybe the loan doesn't go to plan. There's a managerial change, and you know, with Gelhardt in particular, there's injuries. I mean, with Matteo Joseph, you know, he was going to be playing a part at the beginning of the season, if not for picking up an injury, which kept him out for the first month. And then it was what Farke was saying after the Chelsea game in midweek. You know, it's then very difficult to break into a good championship team that's creating chances, that's scoring goals, when you don't really have any evidence to back it up. You know, to say that I've done this before and I should be given the opportunity. He's had to be patient. He's had to really work hard. And I'm just really pleased for Joseph that he's been able to take the opportunity. Because he's, again, it feels like there are quite a few characters in this Leeds squad who are genuine lads. You know, they appreciate the sort of the undertaking that the fans do, you know, traveling all over the place, and seem quite humble about it, about their opportunity that they have, which I don't think can be said everywhere. Obviously, there will be other players like that at different clubs, but I think in general, the opinion of footballers is that a lot of the time they are entitled, very well-paid young men who maybe don't behave the best and maybe take things for granted. But it seems as though, you know, your Jorginho Rutas, your Matteo Josephs, you know, those types of players, they actually do really recognise the privilege that they have. And I think Daniel Farke is a big part of that as well. You know, someone to remind them and keep them grounded, like he has done, you know, or at least like he has said he's done or attempted to do throughout this season. And, you know, the players speak about him in glowing terms as well. So it seems as though there's a very strong relationship there. But yeah, I mean, what else caught your eye at Chelsea? There was a few interesting bits in your off-camera moments this week, Graham.
What's there? What else caught my eye?
Well, I haven't read it. It's just that I know that I contribute about half of them. And you'll be taking the credit for that.
You are my eyes and ears. You know, it's a team effort. Yeah, I can't really remember. The fact that Andrea Radrizzani appeared to be there was interesting. 2 years and a day after the sacking of Marcelo Bielsa, and 2 years on from appointing Jesse Marsh, taking the opportunity to have a watch of his former club. Must have been in London on business or whatever, and it coincided. It was nice actually seeing Eddie Gray and Ron Chopper Harris having a catch up, like old mates. Like, imagine them in their pomp. Like, they were superstars, you know, so famous, so well known, so beloved by their clubs and their fans at that stage, and now they're kind of both mature gentlemen. You know, their playing days are long behind them. They've taken on kind of legend status and at their clubs, And they were chatting away. I'd love to know what they were chatting about. You know, if they were chatting about the good old days or if they were just talking about the here and now. But it always, I don't know. I often think that people maybe, not Leeds fans perhaps, but people maybe take for granted just how big Eddie Gray was and those Leeds, that Leeds team was. Like, they were conquerors of Europe. You imagine that in today's terms. You know, these were like
enormous, yeah.
They were the best of the best, like the superstars. But it's always struck me that they don't act like superstars. They don't talk like superstars. They don't carry kind of a superstar aura around with them. And yeah, I think if you compare them with some of the superstars of today, people who haven't achieved maybe nearly as much as they achieved, I think it'd be quite sobering for some modern day footballers.
You probably had posters of Ron Harrison and Eddie Gray on your walls as a kid, did you? that's your era, no? That's what they're the teams that made you fall in love with football, right?
That's very, very funny. Yeah, I mean, yeah, the match of the day was on a Saturday. There was always one match on a Saturday, and it was always Leeds, you know, that lovely white kit. I'm not that old. And I grew up in a much more modern era. But that was a nice off-cam moment. And I'm sure there were others as well. If people want it, they can go find it on our website and read it.
Always directing people, always directing the traffic back to the website. A real professional. What else? What else was there at Chelsea? We haven't talked about the food in depth. I think, you know, there's been a few times where people have replied to the podcast tweets on the YEP account or to us individually and said, you know, we quite enjoy the little natter, the sort of off topic discussions that we have about certain press foods at certain grounds and how sometimes it's a bit terrible. Sometimes it's, a chicken balti pie with mushy peas 6 weeks in a row. It's a really cold, stale steak and ale pie. But Chelsea, they really push the boat out, don't they? Just to illustrate just how extra and how opulent the offering is there, they had something which just blew me away. It was a make-your-own Biscoff cheesecake bar. Just incredible. That's just bravo to whoever came up with that. I had two. I went up before kickoff. I had seconds to my actual meal, and then I had one at halftime as well. Excellent. Just spot on. You know, Chelsea, you get a lot of bad rep sometimes, but the catering department, it feels maybe inaccurate to call them a catering department. I'd like to call them a dining department, because of just how good it was. You were just blown away by the vegan options, weren't you?
Yeah, I'm not vegan, but I can't have that poisonous cow juice. And Chelsea do it right. Like, they've got a QR code on the wall. You scan it; it brings up the menu with all the allergens in. The chef working on the press food is the Caicedo of press food chefs, really. He's the king. And some of the food was fantastic. I certainly had my £31 worth. You probably had closer to £93 worth, I reckon, of scran.
I'm just taking into account the fact that, you know, there might be one or two journalists who, you know, had submitted their accreditation request, and then for whatever reason their desk said, you know, we don't need you at this game anymore, we need you somewhere else, or couldn't make it for whatever reason. You know, waste at want not, Graham. If there was leftovers going, then, you know, I mean, you forget I'm still a growing boy. The problem
was that you had, you know, John Newsom was man marking the wedges, and you had Popey was touch tight to the desserts for a good 20 minutes. So, you know, getting in there, getting access was sometimes the issue.
But they're two big centre halves, those two guys. Whereas I'm sort of more of a tricky winger, so I was able to sort of sneak in, drop a little drop of the shoulder. Oh, and there he goes. He's got another Biscoff cheesecake. Those little pina colada shots? Not actually alcoholic, but sort of the, what were they? The coconut.
I don't know. Like, I didn't have one. I had the rice, the vegan rice pudding.
And that looks really appetizing.
Which was really good. Really, really good. Yeah, Chelsea's right up there, I think, for that effort. That rivals Spurs, I think. But the only real way to judge any of this is to return to the Premier League and to be there with a proper accurate report on what, you know, the best of the best is, the top gun of press food. So it is important that Leeds get promoted this year.
For that reason.
Exactly.
Yeah. And just one final comment on that topic, on this particular topic. It is very much my topic. The apples were such a deep red colour that I honestly thought they'd been hand-delivered by a hunchbacked woman with one tooth, and she'd maybe poisoned them. It's like something out of a Disney fairy tale. And I tell you what, they were top-notch apples. How'd you like them apples?
Do you think Daniel Farker reminds you a little bit of Gaston?
Gaston? What, from... Wait, are you saying the man from... Wait, I'm thinking of the right character here.
You definitely are. The one who's always flexing. It's at the start of... Which Disney film is it? Is it The Hunchback of... No, it's not The Hunchback. It's Beauty and the Beast, isn't it?
Yeah, that's why I didn't want to say it, because...
Yeah, but the thought just struck me. I was thinking, which classic Disney character is he? And that was the one that I settled on.
I think it's fairly accurate, yeah. Yes, that is quite accurate. It's quite a brutal depiction of of Daniel Farker as a Disney character, but we'll take it and we'll run with it.
Speaking of Farker...
Yes, yesterday.
Yeah, I feel like I've spent more time with him this week than I have my own family. We saw him...
Just the way you like it, then.
Yeah, we saw him just the way my family likes it. We saw him after the Chelsea game, and then we saw him again the very next day in the afternoon at Thorpe Arch for his pre-Huddersfield press conference. He had one of his customary little jokes, little quips as he arrived about something about... seeing us again so soon, and Popey launched into talking about the fire alarm going off in our hotel at midnight. Farker's not there to talk about, huh?
Did that happen?
Yes. So at midnight, I was busy tapping away the verdict, trying to get it ready for the next morning, and the fire alarm went off. And I never know what to do in these situations. I think, shall I just style it out and stay in my room and hope that I don't die, or shall I do what you're meant to do, what's been conditioned into you since birth, and follow the sound of the great big loud noise? So I stuck my shoes on and I traipsed downstairs, using the stairs, not the lifts, in the event of a fire or presumed fire. And then I bumped into a bleary-eyed Johnny Buchan from BBC Leeds, and together we went to investigate. And you have not seen a lack of urgency, the likes of which we found on the reception desk, since Chelsea took that goal kick. It was actually incredible. Just the lack of communication, the lack of urgency. They just kind of were going about their business. A few people had gone outside, I think, to try and like to congregate, as you would do as a normal human being. And then one of them casually looked at me and went, yeah, it's a fault. Yeah, so shall we go back to bed then? I was like, yeah. Took the lift back up. Alarm went off. Brilliant, I thought. 2 minutes later, alarm went off again. So I think it was about half midnight when they finally sorted it. So yeah, that was probably why, Popey and myself were looking quite haggard when we met. Tell you what, impressively fresh-faced and high-spirited Farker for the Huddersfield press conference. And I suppose he came armed with good news, didn't he? So that's maybe the reason for his chipper demeanour. And he was pleased with the performance as well at Chelsea, so that's another reason.
I've got a fire alarm tale, which might entertain you, and you know, might entertain others. It was sort of back during my university days. Had moved into what would you call a university accommodation run by a slum landlord, potentially. And moved in, and one of the fire alarms was hanging off the ceiling. So we thought that's just a great sign. Sort of that you could see the wiring. It's great. One morning, 6 a.m., fire alarm goes off. And I mean, this is the most piercing, horrible noise I've ever, ever heard. And managed to sort of, well, we checked that there wasn't a sort of like an electrical fault, to, you know, that was downstairs in the kitchen or whatever, and we were about to be burnt to a crisp. And then my friend and I, we decided, right, okay, we'll just hold the buttons on all of the offending fire alarms until we find out which one's going off. Managed to do that. Go back to bed. 5 minutes later, exactly the same noise. Somehow it felt louder, maybe because the ringing was still in my head, and because again it woke us up. And to which point we couldn't figure out which one was going off, and we decided to take apart the fire alarms at 6:05 or 6:10 in the morning from every single room with hammers and fists, which is, I think, the closest that I've come to being Adam Pope in my entire life. That's probably the most masculine thing I've ever done, because it genuinely was the most piercing, horrible noise. I think in that situation, you know, you probably would have been, you and Johnny Buchan would have been stood outside. Johnny, of course, of the Don't Go to Bed Just Yet podcast. You'd have been stood outside letting the alphas take care of things. I think if I was relying on a fire and investigations team, I don't think you and Mr. Buchan would be my first ports of call. Although,
of course, he hadn't gone to bed just yet, had he?
Honestly, we like to pride ourselves on having the best, I don't know, the highest caliber of comedy on this podcast, and yet you insist on bringing it down to a certain level every week.
Can we talk about the team news for Huddersfield now?
Yeah, we can.
I told you
this
story.
Is 3 weeks in a row where you're trying to hurry things along. Would you like to produce and edit this as well?
Maybe.
I don't think you would. It takes a lot longer than you'd think. Although I'd love to watch you wrestle with sort of the tech of trying to
edit. It would be like Owen Wilson in is it Zoolander, where he's like, he turns.
Sorry, can we talk about the team news for Huddersfield, please?
Sorry, yes. Jorginho Rutter, my new friend, my new copain, and your hero. He told us yesterday at Thorpe Arch that he feels much better. So he's hopeful that he can play against Huddersfield. And Farke is very hopeful as well. He said he took part in training. We actually got the chance to speak to Rutter and Ilan Melier as part of this thing Leeds were doing about the magic weekend when the rugby league comes to Elland Road in the summer. So what they did was they got two French lads from the Rhinos.
Whose names you definitely remember and are not currently Googling.
Whose names, just off the top of my head, were Justin Sanger and Mika Goudemont.
Good man.
So they joined Melier and Rutter for some sort of like funny game, you know, for Sky. Name this, do this, what's this picture, whatever. All in French, it sounded like. And then they had them play bulls as well at one point. Rutter was absolutely champing at the bit to get at that. And so we got the chance to speak to them, yeah, just about anything really, about how things are going. I think it's fair to say that Rutter has now made himself at home at Elland Road. It feels like he's very much part of the furniture, though he wasn't using his furniture on Wednesday night when he watched Leeds, because he said he couldn't sit on the sofa, he had to stand up. It's the first time he's watched Leeds United on TV as a Leeds United player. And I think it's safe to say he did not enjoy the experience. Very nervous, didn't like the fact that he wasn't playing, but very, very impressed with the team, with Matteo Joseph, who he said deserved his goals because of just how hard he works. Referenced the fact that they played together in the 21s last season, which I'd completely forgotten. I'd completely forgotten that Rutter was consigned to the 21s during the bad old days last year. And he also gave us a really lovely line on Stuart Dallas, because I've lost count of the number of times I've watched the little tunnel cam at the end of a game. Rutter comes in to give it, you know, the full beans.
The let's go treatment, yeah.
The let's go treatment. And Stuart Dallas is almost always there, one of the first people to congratulate Rutter or whoever's coming down the tunnel on the latest win, you know, playing a full part as an encourager and whatnot. So I asked Ruta what kind of a teammate Dallas has been, having an inkling that he's probably been quite a good one for Ruta. They don't make for the most natural of pals, you would say, one being a 21-year-old Frenchman and the other being a 32-year-old Northern Irishman. But Ruta was saying that last season when he wasn't playing, he said, you know, he'd be in a bad mood. He'd be grumpy and angry. And they'd go into the physio room and there was Dallas, who, of course, wasn't playing for a huge amount of time through injury. And he said that, you know, I'm not playing and I'm angry. And here's this guy, he's not playing and he's saying nothing. And he said it just inspired him. And he said Dallas has helped him a lot, spoken to him a lot. What a guy, he said. That was quite nice to hear, actually, the role that Dallas is playing. But Ruter is an incredibly engaging and endearing character. I feel like Leeds fans have properly taken him to heart this season. And the goals and the assists definitely help. But they love a boisterous character at Leeds. You know, Alioski was another one. Ruter, thankfully, stays on the slightly more sane side of the line. Like you wouldn't find him just picking up, you know, a Sky transmitter and walking off with it and cutting an interview live as it happens. You probably wouldn't find him doing that, or shaking the tunnel, you know, or any of the other number of weird and wacky things he did. But Ruter is a very loud and boisterous character, and I think Leeds fans quite like that.
Yeah, he's got personality, and in an increasingly sanitized world of, you know, people who are in the public eye, they're very naturally so, and rightly to be this way, but very careful of what they say and very guarded, because they know that it can be sort of turned on its head and it can be misconstrued. But, you know, Ruta doesn't seem to worry about that, and even when he is giving answers, which, you know, are, I don't know, they're sort of your textbook footballer responses, he sort of does it with a bit of panache and a bit of, I don't know, a bit of personality to it, which, I don't know, it shows that, you know, he does actually, you know, he gives a shit, basically, about what's going on. Well,
why
I thought about saying it. And
why
I was,
don't you
I was
say
like,
it in French?
Well,
Donne une merde.
I don't know how to say it. I mean, oh no, I do know how to say it in French. But no, he does. He cares. And that's the long and short of it, really. I don't think there's too much more you can really say about Jorginho.
I think you're right. I think he cares about what he's saying as well. Like, he's actually bothered about the interview, which is nice, because you don't always get that. You know, I can think of a Leeds United loanee who was quite high profile, who is now famed for giving pretty horrific interviews. So as a journalist, I know which of the two I'd far rather speak to and which of the two would be far more interesting to speak to. I am kicking myself, though, because I did mean to ask Ruter something like, pourquoi avez-vous acheté un cheval? But it completely slipped my mind and we've run out of time. So I'll have to wait to ask him about his equine exploits.
I'm guessing that you didn't get sort of like a distinction in your French A-level speaking exam for pronunciation.
As I said to my teacher repeatedly, I'm not a Frenchman, I'm a Northern Irishman speaking French.
Right. Okie dokie then. And that's probably what you would have had to have said to Jorginho after he sort of went, what? Quoi?
Que? That's Spanish.
Yeah, quoi is correct. So jot that one down.
But there's good news, though, that if he's back, isn't it? Because I actually thought they missed him at Chelsea. I actually think that had they got Ruter in there at 10, they'd have terrified Chelsea in transition. There were moments when the ball went to Joel Pirou. And I don't want this to turn into a let's dig out Pirou segment, but I felt like he slowed down the attack because he doesn't seem to have the same quickness of thought and ability to turn on the ball at pace the way Ruter does. If you play the ball up to Ruter with a man at his back, he can be off and away in the blink of an eye. Pirou doesn't quite seem to have the same awareness, perhaps, of who and what's around him. And I think he needs slightly more time to settle the ball and find a man. And he had to go back a few times instead of going forwards, and did some good things in the game. But I think there were times when I thought, if that was Routier with this space, you know, this time on the ball, this possession in this area, he'd have really hurt Chelsea. It'll be great for Leeds to have him back if he can start at 10 against Huddersfield.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think as well that the physical makeup is different as well. And I think Jorginho's a little bit taller, a little bit leaner perhaps, and just is able to sort of move in a way which is, I don't know, it lends itself a bit more to sort of evading pressure. Whereas Pirou, a lot of his time has been spent as a player, you know, playing on the shoulder. So playing with his back to goal all of a sudden maybe isn't the best thing, or, you know, it isn't going to get the best out of him, particularly against Premier League opposition who are going to be right on his every touch. Should we talk about how you spoke to Ilan Meslier as well? What did he have to say? Are you able to talk about that, or is there a little bit of an embargo on that?
Yeah, we have embargoed that. But there is one thing that we can say.
He's
very tall.
he's very tall. And Graham, you were sort of taking a video on your phone. And halfway through that video, the framing of the video seems to drop ever so slightly, and, you know, chops off the top of Meslier's head. I presume that's because your arm was getting tired. Not willing to.
I think I was just
such weakness.
I think I was just. I was being lulled by his voice, by the deep rumblings of his voice that was just sending me to sleep, I think. No, you're right. He's very tall, and I had to extend my arm at an unnatural angle in order to frame him for the video. But I got you enough footage, so let's have no more of that complaints. What I can say about Meslier is that some of the questions I asked him, what I wanted to know was, are there similarities between the promotion team you came into under Bielsa and this one? You know, maybe in terms of mentality or the way you look at things. Really interesting line from him on that, which you should look out for. Probably the top line that we go with later. I also asked him how he feels he's changed as a person and a player, because he came into that team as a very tall child, and now he's a very tall grown-up, or young man, as he called himself. Jeune homme. And
fine, young man.
Bit of French there, foot lads. And yeah, there's something else I asked him as well, but I can't quite. Oh, I asked him about the clean sheets, you know, what it takes to put all those clean sheets together. So yeah, it was good. Actually, it was another good interview. Very different character to Routier. It reminds me a bit of Ivan Drago from the Rocky films, you know, the very kind of deadpan. Very deadpan. I imagine he's got a very dry sense of humor. In fact, he has been named by a couple of people as like one of the funniest in the dressing room, just because, I think, because he's so dry, and the tone with which he speaks, almost anything he says could be deemed comedic. So he's not quite as bubbly and as boisterous as Routier. But yeah, it was another decent interview. And then we went upstairs to speak to the boss.
Yes, ahead of the Huddersfield game this weekend. Obviously, Farke not very pleased that it's a lunchtime kickoff, providing a bit of insight into sort of the preparation before a 12:30 game. You know, players practically having to get up at 6 a.m., you know, then having their carbs and their noodles at, you know, 7-ish in the morning. It's a very unnatural time to eat that sort of food, he said, which I did resonate with. I don't think I'd want to be eating something very carb heavy at that time in the morning, or like a, you know, a big pasta and chicken dish. Huddersfield, what do you make of them? Obviously, Andre Breitenreiter, the new coach, head coach or manager there. They won last weekend, and they are fighting for their championship survival. So what kind of game are you seeing?
Well, this is their Chelsea away in the FA Cup, isn't it? That's what this is. This represents almost a cup game to them. It's patronising to say it's their cup final, but there is an element of that when Leeds are kind of the the big city down the road, the kind of the more well-known, bigger Yorkshire cousin, I suppose. So there is going to be an element of really wanting to turn Leeds over. And I wouldn't be surprised if they were, if they played and performed beyond the levels they've been capable of previously against different opponents. That wasn't the case when they came to Elland Road, was it? I mean, they got pumped. They got absolutely pumped at Elland Road, and it should have been way, way more than 4-1. But that win over Sunderland at home was impressive, wasn't it? You know, Sunderland are a decent team, and to keep them to nil, you know, is a decent result. Beat Wednesday as well, didn't they? Who are scrapping. So that was a huge, huge win for them, and another Yorkshire derby. So, yeah, the results actually haven't been that bad. They've only lost two and eight, something like that, 2-8, 2-9. So they've got a decent bit of form behind them themselves. It's an early kickoff, which I always worry about, because you always have that thing in the back of your mind, are the players properly switched on? You know, is it natural for them to be properly switched on at this time of the day? Yeah, it's their job, and they're professional footballers, and they're being paid a fool's ransom to do it. But you just wonder about the kind of the physiology of it, you know, getting your body up to full speed at that time when compared to, you know, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So let's see. But I mean, ultimately, again, without being patronizing, Leeds should have far too much. They should have far, far too much. And this is a game they should be winning.
Yeah, well, they showed that they had a greater expected goals total against Chelsea in midweek, against a decent Chelsea side, a Premier League opponent, a cup finalist. So yeah, they should have. And that was without key players like Patrick Bamford, without Jorginho Ruta, without Ilya Gruyff. So yeah, they definitely should have enough, whether that's, you know, even if it is away from home. I think most fans would be disappointed if Leeds don't come away with all 3 points.
Here's a wee question for you. If Ilya Gruyff doesn't recover in time, what do you do?
So that's interesting. I was going to ask you that. So we're definitely on the same wavelength again today. What I do is I bring Ethan Ampadu back into centre-half, because against Huddersfield, Leeds are going to dominate most of the ball, you'd imagine. So Leeds are going to be more advanced up the pitch. So Ampadu is going to be taking up a position which is, by and large, a similar sort of position where as he was on Wednesday night, where you gave him a 9. Disagree with that. I think Archie Gray deserved the 9 and Ampadu an 8, but, you know, splitting hairs. And I would keep Archie in midfield, and I'd bring Glenn Kamara back in. So Kamara in for Cooper, basically. And Ampadu goes to left-sided centre-back, Archie and Kamara. Because, again, I think the threat that Huddersfield are going to carry is going to be on the counter, because Leeds are going to dominate the ball. So I'd want someone who's able to make those recovery tackles like Gruyff, like Archie did against Chelsea on Wednesday night. I think as well, Connor Roberts would probably benefit from having a little bit of continuity, staying at right back. And yeah, Kamara, obviously having had a rest, you know, he'll come back in and pick back up where he left off. So that's what I'd do. Any difference of opinion?
No, I think I probably agree with you that I'd keep your little mustache mate at right back, and keep Gray in midfield. Kamara has to come back in for me. And yeah, on Wednesday's evidence, I probably agree. I think that Ampadu and Rodon have a very good thing going right now.
Yeah.
And although Huddersfield are nowhere near the level of Chelsea and will not threaten like Chelsea did, I mean, they don't have the players with the kind of technical ability to play that one-touch pass in that Chelsea produced for their two goals that really did for Leeds on the left side of their defence. Huddersfield don't have the players to do that to that degree. But I think Ampadu and Rodon have earned their spots together. You know, they've really built something together. So I would see them reforming their partnership. And yeah, Kamara definitely comes back in. And Kamara alongside Gray, I think, is a midfield that has got that's got pretty much everything you should need for this fixture. Kamara will cover a huge amount of distance. He'll help recover the ball, but he'll also help move the ball higher up the pitch and retain it. And then maybe Archie Gray, kind of on the back of what he did in midweek, maybe his confidence will be sky high and he can go and dominate against Huddersfield. It feels like there's a real appetite from a lot of people to see him in midfield. And I have to admit, I've been perfectly happy to have him at right back in recent weeks because Cruyff and Kamara have done such a good job in the middle. And it's also meant that all three of them have been able to be on the pitch. And actually, yes, Gray does play a lot more on the touchline when he's right back. He is able to come inside at times and operate more like a midfielder than a right back. But for this one, I find it hard to find a flaw with your argument. I think Peru drops out and Routier comes in if he's able. I think that's likely. Bamford at nine, I think. But I'd love to see Joseph come off the bench, I don't know how match fit Bamford is, and how many minutes he'll be given. I don't think he'll be able to play 90. I don't think he'll be given 90. It's not the way Leeds have been doing things when bringing players back from injuries, even slight injuries this season. So I think Joseph will get a chance to get on again. And then on the flanks, is it Dan James or is it Willy Nyanto?
Oh, that was my secondary question. That's what I wanted to ask you as well. I'm sticking with Nyanto. He's got 5 goals in 5 or 6 appearances in February. I think you have to stick with him. But it is admittedly a more difficult decision this time because of how well Dan James did against Huddersfield the last time around. But you'd imagine that they're probably going to try and negate the failings that they had at Elland Road. So, switch it up. When you've got the option to bring an Italian international in there instead, who is, I'd say, probably a better ball carrier and better dribbler in terms of, when he's going through bodies. Dan James is very much a in behind sort of player, chasing the ball down, running in straight lines, whereas Nyanto can mix it up a bit. I think keep Nyanto on that right flank and see what he can do, because as far as I remember, the Huddersfield fullbacks were tested to within an inch of their life by Somerville and James last time.
Who was the gentleman playing right back?
On Cree's flank. It was Tom Edwards.
Tom Edwards. I felt for Tom Edwards. I had pangs of empathy, seeing a much quicker player go past him with ease. I've seen that. I've lived that this, in recent weeks. So I did feel for him. I would absolutely love to see that again on Saturday in the early kickoff. I'd love to see Somerville doing exactly the same thing and getting at him. As ever with these games, it's huge for Leeds to score the first goal. If they do, I think they go on to win it fairly comfortably. If Huddersfield get the first goal, I can see it being a far more difficult afternoon. And that'll be what they'll be out to do, won't it? They'll be out to get a goal and then to frustrate. I don't think they're going to go gung-ho against Leeds. It would be folly to do so. You don't want a very transition-y, end-to-end, open game against Leeds because of what they'll do to you, because of what Routier and Somerville and Nyanto will do to you in such a scenario. I'm looking forward to it. Looking forward to getting back to porridge, back to bread and butter after the spiced rice pudding in midweek at Chelsea. So I wonder if that's what it'll be. I just feel actually the press would just bread and butter. I'll have to wait and see.
Well, I think I'm holding out hopes that they might have a little bit of cooked breakfast considering the time that we're going to be getting there.
Yeah, I could see bacon sandwiches.
I hope they would go down a treat.
I could see bacon sandwiches. I could see it, yeah. So my prediction is bacon sandwiches, Leeds United to win 3-0. With goals from Routier, Somerville, and Bamford.
I'm also going 3 goals for Leeds. I'm going to say there's going to be sausage sandwiches as well. And it's going to be 3-1, but it's a Bamford brace and a Dan James goal off the bench.
Oh, interesting. Right. Well, we'll see.
We will see. Thank you for listening to the Inside Elland Road podcast this week. We'll be back again after the Stoke game, I believe, in midweek on next Tuesday evening. So yeah, tune in for that as well. And we'll speak to you soon. Bye for now.
The Inside Elland Road podcast is sponsored by PR Supplies at Unit 2 Wither Park Industrial Estate in Leeds. PR Supplies, everything for the home.